This week on Fear of the Free Child podcast.
And my thoughts about education have really evolved, wherein it used to be all about young people being free from the oppressive schooling system to now it's not just about freedom from, right? It's community with, it's a responsibility towards others. It's about being in relationship with others and centering the needs of everyone that you care about in your community. And so that's why we decided to start a BROME as a self-directed education community in Austin, Texas.
You can't keep using tools of oppression and expect to raise free people. Fire!
Peace, peace. Welcome to episode 145. I'm just ready to get into it. I'm going to read y'all Antonio's bio. Antonio Bueller, he, him. Because, well, before I read the bio, I want to tell you why I'm particularly excited about Antonio's presence on Fear of the Free Child podcast. Antonio, in my mind's eye, represents the transition that I really hope that this podcast and the movement around it and all the people doing this work, that's what I hope we inspire. Two things. I want to be a space of support and inspire spaces of support for people who have already chosen the work of raising free people. And then I also want that level of support that I'm involved in to billow out into people's relationship and mindset shifts in such ways that we inspire other people to go deeper into their own de-schooling and go ahead and start participating in liberation work in ways that it makes sense for them. And Antonio's story, coming from Harvard and Stanford and U.S. military and all of these different really super standardized spaces, and being able to use that knowledge and those experiences and the recognition of the limitations that come with those lens to shift over into liberation work, which for him looked like self-directed education, opening a BROME, which is the liberation-minded center, the self-directed education center that he started. So that's why I'm particularly excited. I know a little bit of Antonio. We've been in a book club together. We both were co-facilitators at Agile Learning Facilitator Summer in Ojai, California earlier this year. And we're both very much involved in the movement around self-directed education in various ways. And so Antonio Bueller is a guest, like all my guests, that I'm super excited about having. And those are the reasons why. So, bio. Antonio founded a BROME to liberate children and fundamentally change the way people think about education. He wants learners to have full autonomy over their bodies, minds, and time, so that they can lead meaningful and purposeful lives, positively impacting society and improve the human condition. A BROME is aligned with Antonio's desire to change, undermine, and create alternatives to oppressive systems so we can move toward a freer, healthier world. Y'all see why he's on here, right? Let me finish. Prior to founding a BROME, Antonio worked as a middle school and high school teacher at a startup alternative school in Austin, Texas. He also worked as an admission consultant to individuals applying to college and MBA programs. By the way, show notes page, raisingfreepeople.com/145. I'm going to put a link to an essay that I'm constantly referring folks to, which is a piece that Antonio wrote about how non-conventional or unconventional learners can go to college, like what that process looks like for you to put a portfolio together and deal with the Common App, all of that. And I love that article. I particularly love it because it comes from a dude that will also, as you hear him doing this podcast, straight up be like, why y'all acting like you unschool in the freedom world when you really just trying to figure out a different way for your kid to get into college? Same oppression, different look. I don't play with it. My kind of peoples. Yes, back to the bio, which I can't seem to finish because I have so many good examples of the ways that he walks this talk. Anywho, before he dedicated his career to education, Antonio spent time in private equity, investment banking, and the military. Outside of work, Antonio supports his local library through education-related programming, founded the Peaceful Streets Project, served on the board of a child bereavement nonprofit, volunteered at an orphanage in Bulgaria, volunteered for the West Point and Stanford admissions offices, coached high school football, and had personally mentored and tutored dozens of children. In his free time, which he still figures out how to have, Antonio likes to read, travel, 37 countries and counting, ski, and volunteer for his favorite causes, preferably through direct action. All right, so you're going to hear from Antonio, and I may or may not, I don't think I'm going to chime back in because there's enough goodness going up and through the conversation for you to get the flow. Thank you for being here. Remember, raisingfreepeople.com/145. Let's get it.
This guy with all this shiny checklist background of graduating from the right schools and doing all the checklist things, how'd you end up over here in Liberation Land?
I did not spend most of my life concerned with issues of liberation, that's for sure. I grew up in a family that was not well off. My father was a high school dropout. He joined the military, went to Vietnam for 3 tours as an infantryman, met my mom later in Korea, brought her back to the U.S., and then they divorced when I was very young, and then my dad raised me and my younger brother alone in an economically depressed region of eastern Pennsylvania called Pottsville, Pennsylvania. And I didn't think that college was really much of an option because that's not something that people in my family ever did. And someone told me that if I went to an academy, I could go for free. And so I said, okay, I'll apply to West Point. And I got in. And that was sort of my way to get out of Pottsville. And I didn't really take control of my life at that point. I was sort of in a machine and I was going along and doing the things that I had to do within that machine, first at West Point and then in the military for my 5-year service commitment. And the only thing that I knew during my time in the military was I didn't want to be in the military. So I got out as soon as I could and I applied to business school and I got into Stanford. And so I went, and the reason I went to Stanford, the reason I went to business school was because I figured the best thing to do after the military is go into business and make a lot of money because other people have done that. And after Stanford, I went into finance. I worked in investment banking, and then I had a small private equity fund that I was using to try to buy a company. And that led me into looking at education companies because I've always worked with kids, and people said the best way to lead a good life is to find a job that allows you to do what you love to do. And I'd always worked with kids on the side, volunteering and mentoring and coaching. Mm. I figured the best way to work with kids and help kids was to get into education. And I was looking for charter management organizations, and I was looking at curriculum providers as ways to get into that. And then a curious thing happened during that process is I realized charter management organizations are too bureaucratic and too political and too much subject to the whims of politicians, and curriculum providers theoretically are great, but they're dominated by Pearson and McGraw-Hill and those big companies. Mm-hmm. But I found out about this homeschooling community that I could sell to directly. And when I went to my first homeschooling conference, I was kind of blown away because I met all these kids who would look me in the eye and talk to me as if they were full humans. Yeah, they didn't have to look down at the ground and kick rocks. And I also noticed that they were much more affectionate with their parents and with their siblings. And it shocked me because I'm used to seeing adolescents yelling at their parents, "Leave me alone, you ruined my life." And I said, if the academic outcomes in homeschooling are anything like what they are in traditional schools, then homeschooling sounds like the way to go. And so I started diving into homeschooling, and somewhere along the line that led me to unschooling. And then I had to really struggle with what is the purpose of education. Mm-hmm. If I bought a company in the education space, what would I be doing to kids? And I eventually got to the point where I said, no matter what company I buy, that's in the education space, even if it's selling to homeschoolers, what I'm going to do is I'm going to hurt kids more than help kids, because so many homeschoolers, all they're really doing is bringing the tyranny of schooling or the church into the home.
Yeah.
And I just realized for myself that I needed to support autonomy for children and allow them to escape oppressive environments. And so that led me to move to give my money back to the investors and move to Austin, Texas, where I was going to help kids escape conventional schools and so that they could unschool. I got to Austin, and the people I talked to when I'm trying to talk to people about ways to exit the schooling system, I got two forms of feedback. One, have you ever taught? And the answer was no. And then two, do you have an ed degree? And the answer was no. And so a lot of people dismissed me right off the bat.
Mm.
And so I decided to go teach at a progressive school for 2 years. And it was a startup school, so I was right there from day one. And I was doing that to get that experience of teaching. And I was talking to as many people as I could. I was giving some public talks. I was writing a little bit. And I was envisioning what the future was going to look like for me. And then on New Year's Day 2012, completely unrelated to education, I was driving a buddy home from a New Year's party. I was a designated driver. And we pulled into a gas station. There was a DWI stop in progress. We started filling up the truck with some fuel, and we're just watching this stop in progress. And at some point, two police officers rip a woman out of the passenger side of the vehicle. She starts screaming. I started to take pictures. I started yelling at the cops, asking them what they were doing, telling them to let the woman go. And then I got attacked by the police officers, and they charged me with the felony of spitting in a police officer's face. And that carries a 2 to 10 year penalty in prison in Texas. So after that happened, after I got out the next day, I went to social media, asked for witnesses to step forward. We started posting, trying to get people to come forward. And very fortunate for me, witnesses did come forward, including one who videotaped part of the incident on his cell phone. We were able to go to the media with that. And then people started rallying around me. And that is where like the other half of my life sort of came into play. So I was already doing the education thing, trying to help young people escape what I felt was an oppressive schooling apparatus in our society. And by coming into contact with this side of law enforcement that I had never seen before, I was introduced to just so many people who told me their personal stories of police abuse and corruption. And I met people who have had way worse happen to them than had happened to me. So I had to struggle with what is race? What is class? How do these things play out? I was of a more libertarian mindset at the time. So I hadn't really interrogated my place in society in terms of class and race and other social hierarchies that tend to get ignored in the right and in libertarian type circles. So that gave me an opportunity to see the world through different lenses. And we ended up taking all the people who rallied behind me and turning it into a grassroots movement in Austin, Texas that spread a little bit throughout the country, but we called it the Peaceful Streets Project. And we did a lot of cop watching, a lot of Know Your Rights trainings, and that's been going on now, I guess, for 7 years. And I was subsequently arrested another 5 times just for filming the police or questioning the police. Fortunately, my case, after it was adjudicated, I was acquitted or exonerated on all charges, which I think points a little bit to a lot of good fortune and privilege. And after a couple years of doing that full time, just trying to take on the problem with policing, I realized I really do need to get back to my life and my life's work, which was education. And at that point, I decided to check the other box that critics had when I talked about exiting the system. And I went back and got a graduate degree in education at Harvard. And when I came back to Austin, I played with a couple ideas with regards to education, but I ultimately decided that in order to have a really positive impact, I really couldn't skip out on the community piece. And my thoughts about education have really evolved, wherein it used to be all about young people being free from the oppressive schooling system, to now it's not just about freedom from, it's community with, it's a responsibility towards others, it's about being in relationship with others and centering the needs of everyone that you care about in your community. And so that's why we decided to start a BROME as a self-directed education community in Austin, Texas. And that's really what I've been doing now for the past 3 years.
One of the things that I really love about what you said towards the end of that share is that that shift, when you recognize that the work needed to go from not just what they would escape or exit, but what it means then to be essentially what I call being ourselves together and being safely ourselves together as a result of that freedom, and even as a part of that freedom. Because if we're working towards freeing ourselves and freeing people who are not free, what are the tools in place for them to practice what liberation looks like, right? And you recognize the need for that particular bridge.
Right.
I really appreciate that, because I think that's something that for a lot of us, as we explore alternatives to conventional education, when we come across the recognition that this is so much more than leaving a thing or not believing in a thing or recognizing that a thing is never gonna, a thing being school in this case, is not gonna get you what it is that you need to thrive. The tough work is recognizing, but then also, what do we do with what we now know? And that's what I really appreciate about what you're doing now at Abrome, because you and I share that belief that self-directed education, and for me, unschooling philosophies in particular, is exactly how we get to that. That's how we allow for emergent structure. That's how we develop language and habits and practice that is in alignment with being free and safe together, where we're not relying on police because we have real relationships with each other in community and can regulate and feel safe doing that sort of thing. That comes up for me as I hear your story and your focus.
Right. What was interesting about Harvard, which I didn't have with West Point or Stanford, is that I had some life experience that wasn't sheltered or prescribed in any way, mm-hmm. that I was just sort of going along with, both in terms of the work that I was doing in education and the stuff that I was doing with regards to policing. I think I went into it with a much better understanding of who I was and what I was trying to get out of life and get out of my experience at school. Mm. And interestingly, by this point, not that I ever put a premium on grades or anything, but at Harvard, I really could not care less about what people thought of me in terms of performance or intelligence, because I knew exactly what I wanted to get out of it. And when I cared the least is when I actually did the best. And so I took courses at the law school, the business school, in the sociology department. And I did shockingly well, considering I wasn't even trying, relative to Stanford and West Point, where I tried, and I didn't do that well. But the biggest thing about going to get my ed degree at Harvard was I thought that I was going to meet so many people who just fundamentally agreed that what we do to children in our society is extremely damaging. It's damaging to them as people. It's damaging to the adults who are tasked with doing that work against children. And it's damaging to our broader society in the way that it creates division and it promotes competition and it promotes the notion of there are a few winners and everyone else is a loser in society. And most ed schools are filled with people who call themselves politically progressive. And the reality is that when it comes to education, they are anything but progressive. Yeah. They're very conservative. They very much believe in really limiting the autonomy of children for their own good and dictating to them how things are going to be done and setting the conditions so that they can outperform others, so that they can be successful at the expense of others. And I spent my time at Harvard talking to everyone that I could, asking them if they were interested in working against a system that really harms children and harms society. And the answer was an overwhelming no. And I found one person who was really on board with it, and I brought him back to Austin to work with me. That was probably the thing that was the most interesting takeaway of my time at Harvard. My other big takeaway at Harvard, which I would have seen at West Point and Stanford if I had just been looking around more, is this amazing phenomena where you get the people who have the most in society in terms of privilege and wealth and family position. You set game in their favor so that it's almost impossible for them to lose with all the resources and all the advantages that they had growing up to get into these places. Then when they get in, you tell them that they have overcome all the odds to get there, that they are truly the best and brightest. And there is this really remarkable elitist nature to these schools where you take people who have oftentimes, obviously not everyone, but in general, you take people who have the least challenges in terms of their position in society and the way that they walk through the world, and you tell them that they have truly outperformed everyone else, and you feed into a narrative that they are destined to be the elites of society because they are the smartest and the hardest working, and that they are the ones who should be controlling society for the benefit of all the people that they beat out. And so even though these universities are considered to be really progressive spaces or liberal spaces, the message that is really getting hammered into the heads of the children who go there is one of elitism, and they're being told that the best that they can do for society is really to be at the top of the hierarchy and to control the rest of society.
Yes, absolutely. And then you add to that, Antonio, that the people who are not the ones who are not walking around with the most privilege who get there, go in with this idea that they need to become that. They need to lose themselves and become that in order to be valid or validated. So you have this whole symphony that isn't centering that human in ways that would benefit the communities that people are part of and become. And so tell us a little bit then, Antonio, about how you counter that with Abrome. What is the message? What is the focal point? You chatted a little bit about it in terms of how you got there, but what are y'all doing to make sure that that isn't the narrative that everybody's coming across when it comes to education and relationships?
So one of the biggest things that I try to focus on is removing the focus on competition and being better than everyone else. I think that in both the conventional schooling system, but there's too many people who are unschoolers or in the self-directed education world who are choosing to do it because they fundamentally believe that the schooling system is so harmful that unschooling is the end around. Mm-hmm. This is how our kids can actually perform better relative to everyone else. So I'm not unschooling in service of a better world. I'm not unschooling because I want my children to be freer. I want my communities to be freer. I'm unschooling so that my kid can get into Harvard and then get a great job and be over people. So we want to remove the notion of competing with people in order, one, for any sense of validation, and two, as a measure of success. The other thing that we are really trying to focus on is really understanding what it means to be in community with each other and to be in relationship with one another. And this is actually something that we've struggled with because I use to do so much in the conversations that I would have with young people and their parents or guardians. I would talk about, at Abrome, you get to do whatever you want to do. And just the way that I worded that, what I was trying to say is you have autonomy. You get to decide how you spend your time. But just by the nature of me saying, you get to do whatever you want to do, the young people started repeating that back to me, particularly in moments where they might have been engaging in activity that might have not been supporting other people or that has been hurtful to other people. And if I would talk about how did that action impact this other person, and is that something that you're comfortable with? And the answer sometimes would come back to me, well, at a Broome, I get to do whatever I want to do, so it doesn't matter, type thing. Mm-hmm. And so just trying to shift the notion of you are free to do what you want to do to we're in community together, and everything that we do should be lifting other people up. Otherwise, it's not really community and we're not lifting each other up. We're just replicating many of the problems in broader society, even in a so-called liberated space. And then the third thing is just making sure to create space for the conversations that make everybody uncomfortable, right? And so we are in a space now that, like many self-directed education spaces, is overwhelmingly white, or at least white passing. The majority of our learners identify as male. Most of our families are middle class. They're not economically deprived. Mm-hmm. And so the notion of the learners at our space just naturally having to deal with conversations about many of the injustices and inequities that exist throughout our world would just naturally, those conversations wouldn't necessarily be had if we weren't thoughtful about creating those conversations.
Absolutely. And what about the population of the space itself? Is it diverse so that those conversations are including sometimes who you're talking about?
And the answer right now is not necessarily, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have these conversations amongst ourselves, but we have a lot of work to do. And that's another thing that we try to prevent, is ever presenting ourselves or our space as sort of being woke or like we have it figured out, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's a constant journey. For example, like white supremacy, it's not something that you acknowledge once and you say, yes, white supremacy, and that's not what we do. No, it's actually white supremacy. It's actually in our DNA as a society, and we have to constantly work against it. And so we're doing the 28-day white supremacy challenge, me and white supremacy challenge, for example, amongst the facilitators. And it's very difficult work. And in order to really take it seriously, we have to be vulnerable with ourselves and really challenge ourselves in ways that make us extremely uncomfortable. But it's work that needs to be done. Otherwise, we're not going to do the work justice. And we're certainly not going to be there to be able to, one, support learners who may not have all the privileges that many of the people in our space currently have. Two, we're certainly not going to be part of the struggle against these various forms of social injustices and inequities if we don't do it. But three is, we want to model for our learners and for the families of our learners and for our community in general, you know, this orientation that we are justice oriented and we're growth oriented. And the moment that we try to suggest that we're good and it's just them that need to do the work, that's just a bad place to be as far as we're concerned.
Perfect opportunity to share Developing a Disruptor's Ear, a workbook for learning how to listen despite schoolishness and pervasive whiteness, and knowing what to do with what you're hearing. This is a workbook that stemmed from the equity and self-directed education training sessions that Malika Diggs and I conducted back in September. Developing a Disruptor's Ear is designed to support all people who are dedicated to nurturing healthy, successful, self-directed spaces while recognizing and valuing the intersections of personal identity, race, culture, and the importance of equitable spaces. In this workbook, we'll identify the characteristics, patterns, and outcomes of harmful normalized practices. We'll look at proactive ways to avoid anti-blackness and other dominant behaviors. will look at being in community with groups of people you didn't see growing up or knowing much about. This is what the workbook is about. And if you head over to the show notes page for today's episode, you'll have a direct link from the workbook. And here's a quick excerpt. We're taking the Kumbaya myth out of the circle. There is no time for insisting that love will conquer all. It won't. Not without good communication, real accountability, voluntary grace, and consistent, deliberate effort in practice. Love is a catalyst, not an engine. And so, we will strengthen love with deliberate effort, proactive efforts even, and we will face the reality that if you are not doing this work, then you are for sure causing harm. Change is required, and we're offering space and practice for change to begin or continue in your community now. Head over to the show notes page, click that link for Developing a Disruptor's Ear, and download your copy today.
The overall objective is to not just push back against oppressive institutions, it's to create alternatives and live those alternatives. And that's ultimately where I want to be spending my time. And as long as people are involved in creating alternatives to oppressive systems and trying to create a better world, those are places I like to be.
Yes, that's why we're always going to run into each other, Antonio. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate everything that you do, though. I mean, you're such a precious resource for the world.